Chapter 3. Sunlight. First of the 10,000. War Council. Diocletian Chorus stood upon the wall of a fortress that shouldn't exist, bathed in a halo of unwanted sunlight. While the first natural light to grace his skin in over 5 years should have been a blessing, he found himself pained by its unwelcome glare. His eyes were far too used to the sunless, skyless half-light of the realm below the palace. He wore weariness as a cloak, dulling his senses and pulling at his limbs. Exhaustion burned off him in an aura. The battle was over for now, yet still it leached his strength. This weakness was new to him. He found that he loathed it. Here on the high walls, Diocletian scarcely recognized his surroundings. The curving, graceful spires of the palace's Enara towers were gone, replaced by a grey bastion of rockcrete and plastile. Its minarets, once things of such stark wonder that pilgrims had been speechless upon seeing them, were ground down into rigid armoured gun towers with rows of turrets and laser batteries aiming up at the sky. Crews of maintenance servitors, and small at this distance, worked under the guidance of robed tech priests. It was a truth seen across the city-sized palace. Walls had become ramparts, towers had been rendered down into battlements, and what had once been the most glorious celebration of human ingenuity now stood as a monument to the species' capacity for betrayal. Rogel Dorn and his stone-hearted imperial fists had done their work well. The imperial palace had been broken apart and reborn as a fortress beyond reckoning. Exalted architecture, constructed in dozens of styles over several generations, had been ground down under Dorn's cold gaze, reprocessed into something blunt and crude and inviolate. A pair of imperial fists' centuries marched past Diocletian and Kyria, bolters held at rest. They saluted the custodian and the Oblivion Knight with the symbol of unification, banging their fists to their breastplates. Kyria returned the salute. Diocletian did not. He watched the two soldiers march on and felt discomfort at the sight of their pristine armour, the very same unease he'd felt upon first seeing the palace's horizon turned into an endless ocean of grey battlements.
"How proud they look," Diocletian said.
The words came out as a murmur. His voice was still suffering from the blow that had almost severed his head the day before.
"Our noble cousins."
Cousins. It was true, if one employed a generous license with the truth. The warriors of the Space Marine Legions were raised through a similar process to the 10,000, albeit in the coldest and crudest imitation. Diocletian had been reshaped at the fundamental level, with perfection threaded through his blood and bred into his bones. In contrast, his lesser cousins among the 18 legions were cut open by knives and implanted with false organs, relying on surgical ingenuity and genetic rituals to mimic the end result of better, more painstaking, more complete work. Kyria said nothing. She shifted slightly, meeting his eyes with her own.
"True,"
Diocletian allowed, replying as if she'd spoken.
"They have the right to pride. They have never failed after all. But there's no honour in innocence."
She raised an eyebrow, tilting her head just so.
"No,"
Diocletian replied at once.
"Why would I?"
Kyria's expression shifted to one of patient doubt.
"I don't envy them for their innocence,"
Diocletian admitted.
"But I'm beginning to hate them for it."
Kyria raised an eyebrow.
"I know it's petty," Diocletian snapped. "That's enough of your judgment, if you please."
With their faces bared, the Terran melange of their heritage couldn't be denied. Diocletian was a child of the Urshan steppes, with the dusky skin and curiously light brown eyes of that region's males, the latter standing as evidence to pre-Unity programs of genetic processing. In paler contrast, Kyria had the sun-bronzed olive flesh of the Achaemenid region, light of eye and dark of hair. The high topknot, atop her shaven head, showed tawny streaks in the thin Terran daylight. Both bore the scabbed gashes and discolorations of recent battle. The walking wounded, returning to the surface with a grave tale to tell. Diocletian held a stolen relic in his hands, dirtied by the very fact he had to touch it. Once more he fought the urge to grind it beneath his boot, an urge he'd been resisting since the trophy first came into his possession. He left it on the battlements, relieved to be rid of it, even temporarily. Soon he would leave it with the Captain General. Let Valdor add it to whatever archives were being collected by those still on the surface. Mere years ago it was forbidden for any to set foot here but the 10,000, the Sisterhood, and their mutual king. No others were permitted to walk where the Enara Towers had risen into the polluted sky. For here, the Emperor liked to contemplate the heavens, speaking to his most loyal warriors of his dreams among the stars. Now the battlements that had risen in the tower's place were swarming with gun servitors and Imperial Fists overseers. The stars were eclipsed by a forest of drifting searchlights, hundreds of them aimed skywards at the gently toxic clouds. Each stabbing beam of light hunted the sky for foes that couldn't possibly be anywhere near Terra, but their readiness was unquestionable.
"So much has changed," Diocletian said, looking across the vista of squat gun towers.
Kyria started, surprised at his tone. Diocletian fixed his companion with a neutral look.
"Never that," he said. "I don't mourn the loss of the palace's beauty. I mourn what all of this represents. Dorne and Malkador have both conceded that Horus will reach Terra, no matter what stands in the War Master's way. This is not precaution. This is making ready for war."
Kyria turned to look across the newborn battlements once more.
"What?"
Diocletian asked. She favoured him with a brief glance, the light of challenge in her eyes.
"I have no time for your disapproval, sister. The Tribune is not here. I am. Let that be the end of it."
A low purr of servos and pistons cut into the silence that followed. Kyria nodded towards a doorway in the nearby battlement tower. An Arkwright stood there, cowled by the cloak of her order. Three bronze-plated artificers with metalsmith tools rising from prehensile servo arms, linked to their hunched spines, flanked the priest in silent vigil.
"Golden One," came the tech priest's greeting. "Honored sister."
"Arkwright," Diocletian replied.
Many souls, even among the Imperium's hierarchs, would greet such a consummate artisan with no small gravitas. Kyria bowed out of simple respect, but no warrior of the Custodian Guard would bow to anyone but his sire. The Arkwright was an iron-boned elder, locked into a posture harness to keep her withered muscles upright, her cybernetics and bionics draped in a robe of Martian red and Terran gold. Whatever was left of her original face was surgically buried under reconstruction plating and an insect's portion of ferotic eye lenses. She was female only insofar as her original biological template had been female. That is to say, in the mists of centuries past, she'd been born as a girl child on Mars. The frail construct that approached both warriors now had evolved far beyond notions of gender.
"I am Iossus," the decrepit genius stated. "I have been appointed to attend you before tomorrow's war council."
"We need no attending," Diocletian replied at once. "We have artificers already deployed where we do battle."
"The Captain General believes that the sight of one of the Omnisire's custodians wounded and with his armor damaged will harm morale among the palace's pilgrims and defenders."
For a moment, Diocletian couldn't even frame a response. He would have laughed had the notion not been so impossibly tragic, as if the morale of the refugees sitting safe within the palace's new walls mattered one iota. The war was being fought and lost far from Terra, without any of those dregs even raising their weapons against the foe.
Their morale, he said with patience he didn't feel, is beyond irrelevant.
That may be so, Iossus conceded. But the Captain General insisted, Golden One. As first of the 10,000, his command takes primacy.
Kyria gave her companion a sideways glance. Diocletian backed down, clenching his teeth to prevent himself speaking the dismissal on the tip of his tongue. Kyria was right. This wasn't a fight worth having.
Oh, you may work,
Diocletian said, his tone passionless in acquiescence. The Arkwright drew nearer, leading the three servitors. Diocletian held himself motionless as the Arkwright ran skeletal metal digits across his warplate. The shaking of the tech priest's limbs ceased as liquid pressure compensators in her arm supports adjusted for stability. Several of the struts in her harness vented tiny breaths of cryo-steam in a song of quiet hisses.
"Golden One," she said again. "I wish you to note the honour I take in being appointed to your service."
The vox bleating that passed for her voice was entirely starved of emotion. Diocletian stood still as her black iron fingertips circled a ragged puncture in his breastplate. Machinery clicked in her sloping, elongated skull as she calculated the necessary repairs down to levels of exactitude far beyond the human eye. The scratching and scraping of her meticulous inspection made the custodian's teeth ache.
"Such incredible brutality," said Iossus, "inflicted upon such fine work. Such distinctive signatures in the ruination. Each wound in the Auramite is something singular, something unique."
A murmured hum filled the air around her augmented skull as its internal cogitators struggled to process the impossible findings.
"Incredible,"
the Arkwright said at several intervals. And then once,
"Do you see here? These lacerations in the Auramite layers are quite literally impossible. The carved segments at the manubrium bracing could only have been caused by something that violates the laws of physics. Something that moves in and out of corporeal reality, appearing inside the metal, dissipating matter rather than breaking it."
"Fascinating,"
Diocletian replied, his tone dead. The Arkwright's bestial allotment of islands is cycled and refocused.
"It is, isn't it? And this here, the metal itself, is diseased. This isn't damage. It's infection. A contagion at the clavicle supports taking root in the Auramite layering as though it were flesh."
"How much longer will your inspection take?"
"Impossible to calculate."
Three of Iossus's many hands reached for a particularly savage rent in Diocletian's shoulder layering, their fingers quivering in fascination. She caressed the ripped plating with the sound of knives scraping over stone.
"I understand you are forbidden to speak of what transpires in the Imperial dungeon, but may I ask of the Omnisire, how does the machine god fare since he exiled himself to his sacred laboratory? What works of genius will he bring back to the surface when he once again deigns us worthy of his presence?"
Diocletian and Kyria shared another glance.
"The Emperor is well,"
the custodian replied. Iossus froze, her fingertips resting at the edges of the wound she'd been examining. The cogitators in her elongated skull whined as they struggled with what she had just heard. Before she could speak, she blurted a screed of mangled machine code.
"Your voice patterns,"
she said, muted and low,
"suggest you are deceiving me."
Diocletian bared his teeth in an expression that wasn't a smile nor a grimace. It was a flash of fangs, the expression a lion might wear as it was backed into a corner.
"The Emperor lives and works on," the custodian said. "Does that reassure you?"
"It does."
When Diocletian picked up the war spoil from the battlements, three of Iossus's many hands reached for the relic, the tech priest's inhuman fingers quivering in all too human awe. Diocletian pulled it back, refusing to let her steal it.
"Where are your manners, Martian?"
The Arkwright was respiring heavily.
Where did you come by this?
I am forbidden from answering.
Kyria interrupted with a curt hand gesture. Diocletian turned, as did Iosis.
You look exhausted unto death,
came a cold voice from the arch door. Constantine Valdor, first of the 10,000, strode towards them. The bitter Terran wind breathed against the side of his nationless features, carrying the scents of distant forges and the chemical tang of the great cannons lining the battlements. The throne world had always borne the alkali scent of history, from the dust of a million cultures waging war upon one another down the many millennia. The cycle was now mercilessly set to begin anew. For the first time in its long history, mankind's cradle had known peace. The Emperor had conquered all, and the Pax Imperialis rose from the rubble. Rather than do battle upon the already wasted soil, humanity had sent its greatest, mightiest armies into the void, to wage war far from their homeworld. And yet, war was coming, against all reason. Terra's peace had been nothing but an illusion, born of false and foolish hope. Kyria greeted the Captain General with a brief series of hand gestures. Diocletian saluted with the symbol of unity, fist against his heart, a salute that Valdor returned.
Where is Jesarik?
Valdor asked at once.
Dead. Kadai. Dead. He died with Adnecto Primus Mendel.
Valdor hesitated.
Ra? Ra lives. He is overseeing the defences in the wake of Magnus's ignorance, said Diocletian. I am here in the Tribune's place. Ra, then, Valdor said at last, as if weighing the name and the consequences that came with it. So be it.
Iosis and her artisan servitors worked on scanning, repairing and resealing Diocletian's battered plate. Sparks sprayed from the acetylene-bright fusion tools in the tech priest's fingertips where she pressed them to the wounds. The servitor standing at his back had removed the oromite layering and now worked on reattaching the severed fiber bundle cabling around his right shoulder blade. Once glorious, Diocletian now looked closer to scorched, filthy bronze than imperial gold. By contrast, Valdor stood resplendent in war gear that bordered on ceremonial. Although thousands of scratches and scars marked its surface, and although each one spoke of a battle won in the Emperor's name, they were old wounds, long healed. Artificers like Iosus had worked their arcane craft on each armor plate in the months since the Captain General had last seen war, restoring it to a state of near perfection.
What has happened? Asked Valdor.
Hunger for knowledge of the Emperor's fate was writ plainly across his stern features. Kyria answered with a series of brief hand gestures.
Routed.
Valdor shook his head at the madness of her explanation.
How can the Silent Sisterhood and the 10,000 not be enough to deal with this threat?
Kyria repeated the gestures, a touch more emphatically.
That's why we're here,
said Diocletian, adding his voice to her avowal.
We need more warriors to hold the impossible city. What of the 10,000?
Kyria and Diocletian exchanged glances. Weary of formality, the custodian shook his head.
There is much I can't say. So much is forbidden to be spoken here on the surface, even where no disloyal ears might hear. The last few months have taken a brutal toll, more so than any of the preceding years. The 10,000 is gravely depleted. The Silent Sisterhood fares little better.
He offered the trophy to Valdor.
And then there is this.
It was undeniably a Space Marine helmet, which was, of course, impossible. Constantine Valdor turned the relic over in his golden hands, examining every inch of its construction. The helm belonged to no legion that Valdor could name, and its battered, cracked ceramite was a red worn by none of the 18 legions on the battlefield. Sanguinius's noble sons of the 9th were clad in the rich red of arterial blood, Magnus's traitorous dogs of the 15th wore a paler, more austere shade of crimson. This helm was neither. Its ceramite was a proud scarlet, chipped away to reveal the gunmetal grey beneath, and edged with a bronze-like metal so rife with impurities that it resembled brass. The faceplate was a Mark IV design with significant variation. Its mouthpiece was rendered into a snarling maw, with the respirator grille crafted into clenched iron teeth. The helm's crests were a twin rise of rigid ceramite reminiscent of the angel wings of the First Legion's officer elite, and the high curves of the 12th Legion champions. Yet these were cruder, straighter than either Legion's crests, and emblazoned with brass bolts hammered into the red plating. Each of these elements was unusual, but not unprecedented. There were as many variants in armour mark design as there were foundries and forge worlds producing the arsenals of the Legiones Astartes. In that vein, the helmet was marked with its forge of origin, but the stylistically jagged rune imprinted behind the right aural receptor wasn't one that had yet been seen in the solar system.
"Serum," said Valdor at last. "This was forged on Serum."
He looked at Diocletian and Kyria, though he didn't hand the helmet back to either of them.
"World Eaters."
He breathed the name like the curse it was becoming. Diocletian nodded in agreement.
"The dead legionary wore the devoured world on his pauldron, and the back of his head was wretched with the cybernetics so prized by the 12th Legion."
For a time, Valdor said nothing. What was there to say?
"Tell me everything," he ordered at last.
Kyria's hands wove a reply in the air.
"Then tell me all you can."
Valdor's voice was cold.
"Tell me whatever you can, before we convene the War Council."
Malkador the Sigillite, regent of Terra, wore the unadorned robes of a Terran administrator. He led the War Council, leaning on his eagle-topped staff as if he truly were the aging counselor he appeared to be. They gathered in the Sigillite's private sanctum, a tower that had thus far managed to evade the extensive reconstruction engineered by the Imperial Fists. Its ringed balcony was still open to the Terran night sky, and the shadows of great stone spheres drifted around the spire-top chamber in elliptical orbits, casting their shadows through the tall stained-glass windows. 9 primary globes drifted on heavy anti-gravitic suspensors, each one shaped of Albion white stone. Dozens of secondary spheres, moons formed from dark basalt, orbited them in symbiotic turn, as though the tower's highest chamber were the sun at the heart of the solar system. Malkador referred to it as his study. He liked to have select meetings here at the heart of a three-dimensional astrolabe, claiming it gave him a perspective too easily forgotten in the bowels of the Imperial Palace. He'd refused the tower's reconstruction on the principle of needing somewhere less militant, less miserable to think when he was alone. Despite Dorne's rank as Praetorian of Terra, Malkador's will had won through. It remained a rare needle of artisanal beauty in the palace now reborn as a fortress. Several of the most powerful men and women of the Loyal Imperium stood around the circular hololithic table in the heart of the tower-top librarium. They were surrounded by the priceless scrolls and relics of 100 lost cultures, from the oldest of old Earth to the many that had faded out of existence during the Dark Age of technology. Wooden carvings, broken statue fragments of white stone and black rock, scrolls encased in stasis fields, pistols and rifles and swords long since given over to rust and the patina of time's mercies. It was an eclectic collection, to say the least. 6 souls stood opposite one another. 6 souls deciding the fate of an empire. Whatever was decided here would go on to be disseminated throughout the Imperium's Byzantine hierarchy, or sealed away behind seals and sanctions forever. Diocletian looked at each of the hierarchs in turn, gathered around a table with no sides, so that all were rendered equal. Fabricator locum trimagia of Mars. Malkador, the Imperial Regent. Primarch Rogal Dawn of the Imperial Fists. Kyria, Oblivion Knight of the Silent Sisterhood. Captain General Constantine Valdor of the 10,000. And Diocletian himself. He had not seen the Mechanicum's new High Priestess before. Trimagia was a stick-thin revenant, hooded and cowled in Martian red, showing nothing but her skeletal silver fingers at the ends of her robe's sleeves and a featureless faceplate in the shadows of her hood. She spoke only through the vox grills of the three servo skulls orbiting her on tethered, hazard-striped cables. Three voices in unison, all artificially female.
The Fabricator General requests word from the Guardians of the Great Work.
We bring word,
Diocletian replied, gesturing to the world-eater's helm on the central table.
And evidence.
The Adnecta Primus no longer conveys reports to the Fabricator General,
Trimagia pressed.
Sagrius Kane, blessings upon him, believes our representative in the Great Work has met his end in the course of service to the Omnissiah.
Kane believes right, Diocletian replied. The Mechanicum forces within the Webway answer to their divisional overseers now. Adnecto Primus Mendel was killed several days ago in the fall of a tunnel nexus.
Inconvenient,
said Trimagia's three servo skulls.
Tribune Endymion led a counterattack to bring aid to the survivors. He recovered Mendel's body.
An irrelevancy,
the tech priestess blurted back.
His mortal remnants are of no value to the Mechanicum. At most, his organic matter will be reprocessed for servitor sustenance fluid packs.
Diocletian bared his teeth, resisting the urge to curse at the Martian witch. Good men and women had died in that counterattack. Dawn, a warrior king among the Space Marine legions, wore no armour. In his pale robe he looked monastic and austere, radiating a halo of impatience. He had his battles to plan and fight. He had his own wounds to lick. The stern patrician of the Imperial Fists, adamant in his cold-eyed sincerity, never lifted his gaze from the custodian and the sister side by side.
"Report in full," he commanded them.
Diocletian bristled at the order and caught sight of Kyria's subtle shift in posture. The sister stood with her arms crossed over her breastplate, moving a single finger in a minuscule twitch. Her fingertip rested against the lightning bolt engraved on her bicep plating.
"You think me blind to your coded warnings to one another, Oblivion Knight?"
Dawn asked Kyria. Kyria showed no sign of attempting a reply. Diocletian answered for her.
"She was merely cautioning me against a show of temper at your presumption, Lord Dawn. Only one man may give me orders. You call that man father."
The Primarch watched them both unblinking, before finally nodding with the curtis gesture of his head.
"A thousand matters pull at my mind. Your point is made. Please continue."
"There is little to say,"
Diocletian admitted.
"The last waves that struck the tunnels reaped a significant toll. All of the ground we claimed within Magnus's Folly is swarming with the etheric invaders, and we are being beaten back to the walls of the impossible city. We can hold Callister far more easily than we can maintain our grip on the outward tunnels. For now, the link between the Webway and the Imperial Dungeon remains stable. The Mechanicum-made routes through the city's catacombs remain sheathed in the Emperor's protection and cleansed of etheric activity."
"For how long?" asked Dawn.
Diocletian steeled himself. He gestured to the helm on the table, knowing it would offer a far finer explanation than mere words.
"You know what this portends. The traitor legions have gained access to the Webway. Behind them march silhouettes of Titans. We were already hard-pressed, but now our foes have multiplied. We are losing tunnels in Magnus's Folly at a faster rate than ever before. We have lost our grip on the wider web, and no longer have the numbers to advance. For now, the impossible city's catacombs are safe.
We can hold the reconstructed walls of Kalistar for as long as we must.
Malkador, silent until now, dipped his hooded head.
Where is Tribune Endymion?
You know, thought Diocletian. You know Kadai and Jezeric have fallen. You know Ra is the last tribune. Ah, to catch one of your spies, you cunning creature.
Ra is engaged in battle, the custodian said. I am here in his stead.
During Diocletian's retelling, as brief as it was, Dawn had moved to the wide windows, watching the great metal globes passing by in their elliptical drifts. The daylight sky was darkened by the passing of one of Terra's orbital plates, leaving the Primarch's features in shadow. His face was stone, betraying no hint of emotion. Valdor said nothing. Trimagia was equally silent. Even her skulls had ceased their circling, now bobbing in the air by her shoulders, looking at Diocletian with eye sockets filled with sensoria needle clusters. The sigilite leaned more heavily on his staff, making no attempt to reclaim control of the command briefing in the wake of Diocletian's confession. Dawn turned from the window. Diocletian hated the sudden emotion that lifted the Primarch's features and brought light to his eyes.
"If you need warriors," he began, "then my liege..."
"No."
Diocletian said the word the very same moment that Kyria signed a curt negative.
"No."
As ever, Dawn was calm.
"It is the Emperor's will that the Imperial Fists remain outside the dungeon."
"That was my father's will when he had the 10,000 and the Sisterhood at full strength," Dawn countered. "When he is starved of soldiers and the traitors mass within the webway, how can his command remain the same?"
"How many of your Fists even remain on Terra?" Diocletian countered. 4 companies? 5?
"I have several companies stationed in the event of rebellion from among the conquered territories."
"And the rest of your legion, Rogel?"
"Scattered across 3 segmentums and principally deployed in the engagement spheres of the Solar War. Even so, I offer what I can spare."
"Which is next to nothing."
"Even so."
"It is the Emperor's will,"
Diocletian repeated,
"that the Imperial Fists remain outside the dungeon."
"Tell me why."
"I can only guess," said Diocletian.
His gaze flicked downwards to the deactivated helm taken as a trophy.
"You believe that my men cannot be trusted," Dawn replied,
perfectly calm.
"That they would turn their coats as Angron's dogs turned."
"Trust," said Diocletian, laying into the word. "I am not free with my trust these nights, Rogaldorn. If we could trust the warriors of the legions, the galaxy wouldn't be aflame and severed in two by a Primarch's ambition. I won't argue with you, Praetorian. I merely bring the Emperor's will back to the surface."
Dawn leaned his knuckles upon the table and breathed through closed teeth. Although all knew him as a soul of majestic composure, his dislike of Diocletian and the 10,000's secrecy was deeply etched across his being. Malkador's exhalation was subtler, slower, somehow more tense. Only Trimagia showed no emotion whatsoever. Her faceless visage was capable of none. Her hood dipped slightly. Something clicked behind her faceplate. The 3 skulls began drifting around her in a reversed orbit.
"What of the Omnisire?"
her 3 skulls asked in harmonic monotone.
"He is unchanged. He remains enthroned and unmoving, unresponsive to any stimuli. He has not spoken since taking the Golden Throne. The forces he battles in the wake of Magnus's ignorance are beyond reckoning. We know no more than we already knew."
"If he remains unspeaking,"
Dawn's colourless voice inquired,
"how has he requested more warriors?"
"The 10,000 speaks for the Emperor," Diocletian replied at once.
"We require more information," said Trimagia's drifting servo skulls. "More quantifiable data on the Omnisire's will. Speak, Enunciate. Explain.
The 10,000 speaks for the Emperor. What we ask for is no different than if our Lord asked himself. It has ever been thus.
Silence reigned. Dawn looked back to the overcast sky. His voice was softened by the moment's immensity.
Magnus, my brother, of all your mistakes, this one is by far the most grievous.
Once more he looked over his shoulder at Diocletian and Kyria.
I see now why you came in person.
Diocletian nodded.
If the traitors reach Terra, it is a matter of when, Prefect, not if.
As you say.
When the traitors reach Terra, Lord Dawn, you must be ready to defend the palace without the Emperor's guidance.
If Dawn was tormented by the notion, he showed no sign. The one implacable son, stone and stoicism in moments when all of his brothers would be fire, spite, and honour.
I dared to hope the Emperor's secret war was going well. The audacity of such optimism seems foolish in hindsight, does it not? That I dared to imagine, come the final day, we might only face annihilation from the skies above Terra, not from beneath its surface as well. Horus and his forces are already in Segmentum Solar. Now the Imperial dungeon is at risk of falling. Tell me, Diocletian, could we lose this war before Horus even sets foot on Terra?
Yes,
Diocletian answered at once.
Is it likely?
If all remains the same, yes, we will lose. If our requisition demands for new warriors are not met, yes, we will lose. If the enemy is further reinforced, yes, we will lose.
Then what is your plan? Where will you find these soldiers?
I will aid them in this matter, Malkador said. There are possibilities beyond the obvious.
Rogel Dorn, even calm, was relentless.
Does the Emperor's edict of secrecy remain in force?
Kyria signed a brief affirmation, to which Dorn nodded.
Then you are consigning any volunteers to death, said the Primarch. Sacrificing the Mechanicum servitors is understandable. Culling them, if necessary, is a loss, but hardly immoral. Euthanizing any human survivors you pull down into the webway is a far bleaker proposition.
Kyria's reply was nothing more than a glance to Diocletian and the subtlest gesture of one hand. The custodian translated.
The Lady Kyria's point takes primacy here, Praetorian Dorn. We may not need to cull any survivors at all if we continue losing ground. The enemy will see us all dead, and your concerns of morality will be meaningless.
Dawn's jaw tightened.
Listen to yourself, Diocletian. Hear the words you are speaking and the course you advocate.
Necessity overcomes morality. Kyria's hands signed in the air before her breastplate. Never without regret, never without shame. Yet even immoral victory must outweigh moral defeat. The victor will have a chance to atone if conscience demands. The vanquished lose any such opportunity.
You quote my own brother at me.
Dawn narrowed his gaze.
Rebute is not here, Oblivion Knight. Would that he were. In his absence, I am Lord Commander of the Imperium.
Diocletian resisted a flare of temper at the performance unfolding before his eyes.
This is base hypocrisy, Lord Dawn. How often have your imperial fists prided themselves on enduring conflicts that proved to be flesh-grinding stalemates to other forces? Now you object to the execution of chaff to keep the Emperor's greatest secret? How is this even worth discussing?
Dawn's armored gauntlet crashed onto the central table, causing the hololithic image of the Sol system to jump and flicker.
We are speaking of more than my own sons. Their lives a coin I may spend as I see fit, but you have been underground for five long,
long years, and the 10,000 isn't the only force to have bled itself dry. This isn't the Great Crusade, Custodian. You cannot annihilate loyal souls on a whim. The meaning of necessity has changed now that we draw near to the final days of this war, Diocletian. The words echoed in the air between the gathered hierarchs, as solemn as any confession of guilt.
We will not argue this matter,
Kyria signed, though even she seemed hesitant now. We will gather the army required, said Diocletian, with this Sigilite's aid, if he sees fit to grant it. And I will bring your reservations to the Emperor when circumstance allows.
That is all I ask, Dorne acquiesced with grim consent.
Trimagia closed her left hand, summoning the servo skulls to drift together and dock with the ports on her hunched spine. Malkador made no reply at all. Diocletian wondered how much of this the Sigilite had already known.
If that is all, said Malkador, I believe we are finished here.
Trimagia vocalized a spurt of irritated code.
Is that an objection, Archpriestess?
The docked servo skulls thrummed, a chorus of skinless faces desperate to speak.
Mars,
the three probes voiced at once.
The Mechanicum beseeches the Omnissiah for permission to retake sacred Mars.
Dorne stiffened.
Not here, he said, curt and clear. Not now.
The Fabricator General is aware of your refusal, Praetorian. He bade me take my request directly to those waging war at the Omnissiah's side.
She leaned closer to Kyria and Diocletian, spindly and inhuman, so frail for one who commanded such authority.
Mars must be retaken.
Malkador's staff thudded upon the floor.
Mars will be reconquered when we have the resources to do so.
Diocletian and Kyria remained silent throughout the exchange. They shared a glance, hardly blind to the tension. Malkador's gesture was a plain request for them to leave.
This meeting is concluded, said the Regent of Terror. You have our gratitude, sister, Custodian.
Before any of the hierarchs could argue otherwise, Diocletian and Kyria strode from the room. There was a great deal yet to do before they could return to the dungeon.